Hello and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, it's a welcome return to broadcaster, writer, and one half of 7A Records, Ian Lee.
Hello. That's my cue to come in, is it, and say hello?
Yeah, if you can.
Hey, nice to see you, Chris. You're right.
I'm fine and lovely to be here again.
Thank you. We're going to be interrupted by a kitten. I'm kitten sitting.
She is so
beautiful. So you might hear some meowing, you might hear some purring. She's a very loud purrer, but Willow is around somewhere. So
she is so
apologies,
sweet.
Cat. If you're allergic to cats, I would skip this episode and go back to Samira's.
I'm so glad that you've picked the album we're going to be talking about today.
Yes.
When I originally asked you, you said this album, you described it as Paul Sergeant Pepper.
I love that line. No one picks up on that. I think I'm going to argue, yeah, that this is Paul McCartney's Sergeant Pepper. I think it's an astounding album. There's a couple of weaker points on there I kind of picked up on upon re-listening. But I think it's brilliant. And I don't think many people know this.
Mm. I mean, the short story is that he started recording this before Chaos and Creation in the Backyard,
yes,
and then went back to it. So you've got the first half is sort of Paul and his band, his touring band at the time.
Yeah.
And the second half is kind of him on his own. So it's almost like a McCartney 2.
We should say the name of the album. Or is that coming to a big reveal?
Let's reveal it.
Memory Almost Full.
Oh.
The masterpiece.
It is.
The masterpiece.
The Pepper.
Yeah, it totally is. This is what is amazing about Paul McCartney. And listen, years ago, I would laugh at McCartney. I would laugh at Wings and all of that. In the last few years, I have really embraced the fact that actually a lot of his solo work is brilliant. Some of it is tosh, but if you're going to, you know, release however many albums he's done over, I don't know, 50-odd years of pretty much 50 years of solo stuff, of course you're going to have some weak points in it. A lot of it is brilliant, and there is some stuff that is equal to the Beatles. And one of those tracks is on this album that I think is equal to the Beatles. At least one, possibly two. This album is great. When I first got it, when it came out, a friend of mine, for my birthday or Christmas or something, gifted me this album on iTunes. I think it was the only album I've ever been gifted. Is there a cat under there?
Yeah.
I wondered what you were doing. Okay, there's the cat.
Just stroking.
Okay,
she'll
push her off, but she'll get in the way. I think it's the only album I've ever been gifted on iTunes. So first of all, I thought, okay, it's a non-physical thing. And what year was this? 2001?
2007.
2007. Okay, it's later than I thought. And here's the thing, guys. If you're expecting facts and historical data from me, you ain't going to get it. This is purely an impassioned, you know, argument as to why I think this album is so great. But I was disappointed that my friend had bought me an MP3 album. So it was a little bit of, ungrateful, but I was a big fan of physical format, CDs and records. And also at that point, I wasn't into McCartney as a solo figure. Huge Beatles fan, as always. But I wasn't really into McCartney. And I thought, a new Paul McCartney album. And my friend, Conan, said, you're going to love this album. It sounds like Wings. And I wasn't into Wings then. I wasn't into that. I bought into the fallacy that solo McCartney and Wings were not very good. So I listened to the first couple of tracks, didn't like it, and didn't listen again for years. I don't know how many years, but I think I saw it at a flea market or a record fair or something. Flea market, listen to me.
Flea market. I remember that.
I saw it at a record fair. Or I saw it online for like £2. And I thought, I'll take a punt on this. And it blew me away.
Yeah.
It blew me away. Part of the problem with this album is the opening track should not be the opening track.
Yeah.
Track number two is, and I'm going to get all the titles wrong because I do. Ever Present Past is track two.
Yes.
That should be the opening track instead of Dance Tonight. Dance Tonight, I've grown up and I like it and I enjoy it for what it is. ever present past. It's a brilliant song. It's Old Man McCartney, he's only mid-60s, but Old Man McCartney doing a brilliant pop song where he's acknowledging his past. I love his songs where he references the Beatles and his past. And there's another one of those on here later. But Ever Present Past is just, it's a brilliant song, brilliant guitar sound to it, really kind of clunky and scratchy. Doom, 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 doom. And the lyrics are brilliant. Dance Tonight, put that as track 3.
Everybody gonna dance tonight. Everybody gonna feel alright. Everybody gonna dance around tonight. Everybody gonna dance around. Everybody gonna hit the ground. Everybody gonna dance around tonight.
I also have another slight issue with Dance Tonight. Is, have you seen the video?
Oh, yes, I have.
For that.
With your friend.
My friend Mackenzie's in it, Mackenzie Crook. We were flatmates and, you know, we've done stuff together and he's still a very good friend. And I'm going to be honest, Chris. There was a part of me that was really jealous.
Really?
Really jealous that he was in a McCartney video. If you've not seen the video, dear listener, it's Mackenzie. I haven't seen it for a long time, but if I've got this right, he plays the part of a postman delivering a package to McCartney. And there's a little bit of improvised comedy at the start. We know how good Paul is at that. But it's a really charming, sweet video, actually. And Mackenzie and McCartney were friends for quite a long time. I don't think they're in touch now, but I remember once saying, oh, what are you doing at the weekend? I'm going out for dinner with Paul. And it was like that. Oh, okay. But
love you.
Yeah, and he would get Christmas cards from Paul for years afterwards. I don't think he does now. And I remember to say, what was he like to work with? He said, oh, he was lovely. He's really charming, really liked The Office. Big fan of The Office.
Really?
Yeah, oh, loved The Office.
Oh, wow.
And he said, but his improvisation wasn't great. There was, if I remember correctly, there's a bit in the video where I think Mackenzie says something like, can I have a cup of tea? And McCartney goes, no. There's a bit where he closes him down. And the rule of improvisation is you never say no. You never close someone down. You always go, oh, yeah, sure. How would you like that? And he said, and he kept closing me down and I didn't know where to take it. But it was lovely. And now that jealousy is almost, it's subsided to a mild envy.
Right.
And also, actually, now I can look back and I can be really proud of him for doing that. On actually what is... It's a solid McCartney song, Dance Tonight. Mm. It's a solid song. And I was listening to it yesterday. And I was listening to it again today. And actually, I really enjoy it. And, it's got silly lyrics. So what? Who cares? Yeah. Have you ever listened to Helter Skelter? You know, I'm not saying it's as good as that, but it's got silly lyrics. And I think the rest of the album, for the most part, has got some great lyrics, which are not always McCartney's strong point.
Yeah.
It's got some great lyrics. And, Dance Tonight is lovely. Yeah. Track 3, though, please.
I think the overall, what's overriding the whole album is Heather Mills. Obviously, when he first started doing it, they were together. At the end of it, they'd split up. So you've got sort of the earlier songs still, quite happy, and the later songs where he's going through the process. There's some lyrics on here when you know what he was going through.
Mm.
And also, to be fair, what she was going through as well.
Yep.
There's a lot of grace in some of the lyrics here, because the press, if you remember that, the press and the public gave her hell.
Yeah. Oh, God. Here's the thing. She became... I'm going to go and get my phone in a minute so I can get the full track listing, because, of course, McCartney's not put it on the thing, and I'm terrible with titles.
Do you want to do it now?
I'll do it in a second. But she became public enemy number one. I'm sure there is bad on both sides. I don't think she handled it particularly well, in terms of the press, and in terms of, in a similar way that Meghan and Harry are kind of coming out fighting. Unfortunately, with the press, you can't do that, because they go, oh, you want to, you can't beat the Sun and the Mirror and the Mail. You can't beat them. And also, Paul McCartney is a national treasure.
Yeah.
So he was always going to come out better. But you also have to remember, She was married to him. Whatever happened in that marriage, I have no idea. That's between them. She's the mother of one of his kids. Yeah, one of his daughters. And that must have been horrible, what she and what he went through. It must have been absolutely horrible. And I do feel kind of sympathy for her. Mm. But saying that, I have to say, Linda songs, Nancy songs are greater than Heather songs. I think the songs about Linda and Nancy, I think they are infinitely better. I think that those two women were much more powerful muses for Paul than Heather was. I find that the songs about Heather throughout his, you know, that period,
yeah,
a little bit drippy. Mm. A little bit drippy. Whereas the songs about, you know, Linda, for the most part, they're alive. Mm. They were in love, you know.
They were in love.
Let me go and get the track listing.
Yeah, go for it.
Hang on a second. Kat, can you get off my lap? Thank you, darling. Because as you know, Chris, I'm terrible with song names. This
points you towards the website, doesn't it?
Well, this was that kind of period, wasn't it? Hey, guys, I'm online. You know, I've got a website now. You can check out all the songs and stuff and download MP3s, you know.
angelfire.com/...
Oh, I love it. Another lovely thing about this album, of course, is the anagram of the title, which is purely accidental, but what an accident. Memory Almost Full is... For My Soulmate, LLM, Linda Louise McCartney. And so loads of fans, of course, always looking for clues in any Beatles work to prove, you know, whether Paul is dead or alive, went, oh, of course, this is for Linda, for My Soulmate, LLM. Mm. And there's one interview where Paul goes, maybe it is.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where he goes, no, it was just a coincidence. But man, what a lovely, joyful coincidence.
One of the millions, isn't it, in the Beatles?
It's incredible. One of those, you know, they celebrated those fortunate accidents where there was something would go wrong in the studio and someone would go, let's do that again. And someone, quite often Paul, would go, whoa, no.
Yeah.
Let's keep that in there. You know, that's what makes the record. And so that's a joyous thing. Of course, Memory Almost Full comes from, I think, is it his phone?
Yeah. Well, he said, some things are better left a mystery, which is great. And a lot of the Beatles stories are better left a mystery. Like there was legend of this 25-minute version of Helter Skelter for years and years. And then when eventually we got it, it was like, boom, boom.
Yeah.
That's best left a mystery. Now we know where he got the name for this
album. I've also had it on the highest, almost the highest authority, Mark Lewisohn, is it Carnival of
Lights?
Carnival of Lights. The music for that is awful.
Yeah.
I've spoken to Mark Lewisohn in his den. I said, have you heard it?
There.
Yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah.
Is it rubbish? It's not very good.
I know.
Do you know, there is a very strong rumour they almost released Carnival of Lights for this year's Record Store Day. Had you heard that?
No, I haven't heard that.
There was... I have it from a friend who has a friend, so it's all slightly tenuous, but it's someone I quite trust, that they were going to press up a 12-inch single of the extended Helter Skelter backed with Carnival of Lights.
Really?
And someone at Apple nixed it at the last minute. Mm. But it may... Here you go, Beatles fans. It may even exist as a test pressing somewhere.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Isn't it?
If it did, surely it would be out there by now, wouldn't it?
Possibly.
Or not. Don't know.
Who knows? Apple is a mighty beast, you know. Mm. Tangent time, guys. Have you been to see... So you've been to Mark Lewisohn's house? That room.
Oh, no. Sorry, I thought you meant his show.
Oh, his show. You've been to the show?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I've been to see the show. It was great.
Brilliant, yeah.
They play a clip of that final meeting. Though you know this because you're listening to a Beatles podcast, dear listener, but I will patronise you slightly. The very last Beatles meeting, Ringo wasn't there because he was poorly. So John, Paul and George had a little tape recorder and they recorded the meeting. This is after Abbey Road is done. And this is where everyone thinks the Beatles split up. But actually... Mark Lewisohn has heard it, 50 minutes of it, and it's them talking about the next album and the next single. And Mark was going to play this in the live show. And the show I saw, I don't know how much you heard of it, the show I saw, he said, I was in the press saying I'm going to play excerpts from this. I can't say anything, but someone has told me I'm not allowed to. So I'm only going to play a tiny excerpt of that. And they play a bit of John Lennon saying, I can't do a John Lennon.
Go on.
Well, Paul, no, I can't. My favourite is Ringo Starr. And when he says and.
Bloody.
it's John saying, look, we didn't like Obladi Oblada. You're telling us you didn't like Obladi Oblada. Then why are we recording it? Give it to Mary Hopkins or someone. Don't, if it, there's stuff. And on the next album, we're going to have three of George, two Ringo. And it's fascinating. Yes. I'd love to hear that tape.
Yeah. Right. This might be a bit of help.
Yeah.
Because I know there's been a lot of people. And he did. He did the same thing when I saw him in London.
It's a great show, by the way.
It is brilliant. If you've got tickets, you'll love it. If you can't make it, I would definitely recommend having a look for a book by Anthony Fawcett called One Day at a Time, which was published in 1976.
Yes.
And it's effectively a transcript of that meeting.
Shut up. Go straight to Amazon. Tell me afterwards. It'll be rude to do it while people are listening. Oh, man. Thank you.
I'm wondering if that's where the source of the tape was. Don't know. But it's been in the public domain for all that time. But it took Mark Lewison to actually say, hang on a minute, there is this tape, and it's Mark who's created this, you know, what has effectively changed the Beatles' story.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, totally. And he's listened to all of the Let It... We'll get back to Memory Almost Full in a second.
Yeah.
But he's listened to all of the Let It Be sessions and said, yeah, there are arguments, but John Lennon didn't sound particularly high on smack, because you're taking a whole different tonal attitude. Tonal attitude, you can't stand up straight. And they have arguments, but for the most part, is really joyous. I can't wait for the Peter Jackson reimagining of Let It Be. Oh, man alive. Finally, they're going to release that stuff. Yes, baby.
And in beautiful Technicolor. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Anyway, sorry. Yes. Memory Almost Full. It's a masterpiece.
Memory Almost Full. We digress, but
you've
got to, haven't you, with the Beatles?
Oh, God, as long as you don't mind, because they're just so many delicious tangents to fall down.
I've got too much on my plate. Don't have no time to be a decent lover. I hope it isn't too late. Searching for the time that has gone so fast. The time that I thought would last. My ever-present past.
So Dance Tonight, that was Paul doing all the instruments as well. There's a few on here with just Paul, a few with the band, but the next one, which you were talking about before, that is Paul again playing everything. I think it's on the clavier line, which I think they used on Baby You're a Rich Man.
Okay, there you go.
But yeah, ever present past.
Oh, it's great. It's a really. I remember actually quite liking that when it came when I heard it on the radio. I love the songs where he celebrates his past and he goes, you know what, I was a Beatle. And it's not completely about that. That Was Me is more about that a bit later on.
Yeah.
But it's like, I was there, I did this, and I'm older, and I can't escape my past. I can't escape it. Mm. And I just think it's a great pop song as well.
Oh, yeah.
But really, really good pop song. I would love him. My fantasy Paul McCartney concert is for him to come out and the drums are going, doom, 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 doom. And it goes on for ages, right? And the crowd are clapping. Then he just goes, ooh, ooh, what do you do? No one. He starts with Spies Like Us. But then the second song in that concert.
As the crowd gradually leave.
I would love him to do an 80s concert where he plays that... Puppy Dog Tales in the House a lot. I love that song. Pipes of Peace.
Yeah.
Press to Play. It's a good pop song. The album. Yeah. The album's all right, actually. I think it's had a bad press. Maybe that'll be my challenge here next time. But the single is great. Or Stranglehold from the single. Mm. From the album. All those big, you know, I'm going to say it. I like Ebony and Ivory. Mm. I love that song. And everyone goes, oh, it sucks. No, it doesn't suck. I'm also... Get me on again to do one song, to do a whole podcast celebrating the magic of the Frog Chorus.
Absolutely.
Isn't it brilliant? And I'm not even saying that my tongue is nowhere near my cheek. There is no irony. It's stunning. Mm. It's stunning. The orchestral, it's an incredible piece of music. But it's a joke. It's part of this weird, fake thing that Paul McCartney is a joke. The frog chorus. No. It's brilliant. Mm. Okay. You know, it's maybe, I don't know what did it. Was it Rupert? Was it the video? Was it the period? But if that had been a Beatles song, you know, if that had been on Abbey Road, people laughing at me now. But that is a great song. Yeah. Go and listen to it again, dear listener, without any of the baggage. This is a game I like to play sometimes on my radio show. Get a song that you're so familiar with, or you think you're so familiar with, and listen to it again. And try and pretend it's the first time you've ever heard it. So you've got none of the baggage. A great one to do it with is Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys.
Oh, wow.
Imagine you've never heard that song before. But the same with the frog chorus. Put it on and listen to it. It's stunning.
Mm.
It's a 4-5 whatever it is minute masterpiece.
Yeah. Have you heard the demo he did?
No.
Oh, seriously. He is doing everything. He's doing all of the orchestration with his voice. So it's...
Wow.
It is astonishing. I think it's just an acoustic guitar. It's an acoustic number, but it's Paul doing everything.
Yeah.
Ah, you'll love it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have that.
You'll live... Yeah.
Fantastic.
Win or lose, sink or swim, one thing is certain, we'll never give in. Side by side, hand in hand, we all stand together.
He's so good, and I feel so guilty that I sneered at him, his solo stuff, for quite a long time. I bought into that Wings of Rubbish and not going to listen to London Town. What an album. But I'm making up for it now by just devouring and flying the McCartney flag as high and as proudly as I can.
Yeah. Well, you forget, in the 80s, I remember seeing things in Q, Mojo, where they're interviewing Elvis Costello, and it was all this snide little, so who's your favourite Beatle then? You know, he was working with Paul, and he almost had to justify working with Paul. He was taken that much as a joke. It was sort of late 80s period.
Early 80s, huge pop star. Late 80s, a joke. And I've got to be honest, the weak stuff for me... So this is 2007, memory almost full. Do you know what? I'm not going to talk about Chaos and Creation because it's so long since I've heard it, it will be unfair of me to do it. It'd be unfair of me to talk about it because I can't really remember it. I'm erring on the side of... Actually, I didn't like it as much as the press, but I need to listen to it again. But the albums before that, Flaming Pie, Off the Ground... And there was another one. They're not great. They're not great. There's some great songs on there. There's some really good songs on there. What's the song? Is it Beautiful Day? Beautiful Night?
Beautiful Night.
With Ringo.
Yeah.
Oh, man, jeez. It's a great song. And then when Ringo's vocals come in on the end, oh, jeez. That's great. Mm. So all of those albums have got gems hidden away.
Yes.
But as bodies of work, I don't think, personally, I don't find them very satisfying. I find there's a lot of what I would call kind of lazy McCartney, where he's not really pushing himself. So patronising. You know, what songs have you written, Ian? Well, did you ever write Yesterday or Here, There and Everywhere? Well, no, okay, I'm calling that guy lazy. But I just feel there are some of the songs on there that the slushy ballads that actually don't have much weight, that the critics of McCartney kind of turn to go, see, he is rubbish. He is the cheesy Beatle. He is the slushy Beatle. So for me, Memory Almost Full is a real kind of, fuck you, I'm brilliant. And I know I'm brilliant.
Yeah.
And I don't mind showing off a little bit of swagger. Have a listen to this. Because this is great. Compared to those, this is great.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. No, you can ask me a question now if you want. I realise I dominate this one.
Oh, no, I love it.
Is Samira Ahmed as difficult to work with, or is she? I've heard she's harder.
She's a nightmare, isn't she? Do you know, when I first interviewed Samira Ahmed, I was so glad I didn't see it, but there was an interview she did with the head of BBC.
Yeah.
I think it was about the Cliff Richard thing or something.
Okay, yeah.
And she was tearing this bloke to shreds. And I'm so glad I didn't see that, because I would have been cacking myself.
I would say I'm friends with Samira, and I think she's brilliant. That's what swung me coming on when you said, "Oh, we've had Samira Ahmed." I'm doing it.
She's coming on again.
She said yes. Oh, really? Are we allowed to know what she's doing?
She is doing George Harrison, 1979 album.
Okay, okay.
Big George fan.
Wow, okay, brilliant. That's not something I'm that familiar with, so I shall...
Yeah, if you like melodic, happy songs, I'd go for that one.
Okay, brilliant. Really good. I've got the George box set.
So have you?
Yeah,
dig it out.
I'll dig that out.
He's got his perm going on.
Yeah, there's always a great competition. Who had the worst Beatles haircut?
Yeah.
It's generally George with the wet perm. It's the theme.
Ooh, look what you do to me, baby. You're making me feel so fine.
So fine, so fine.
Step out in front of me, baby. They want you in the front line.
So fine, so fine.
They want to see your sunshine.
So we move on to track 3, See Your Sunshine, which reminds me very much of Prefab Sprout.
This is one of the weaker songs for me. How does it go?
So do you want to play a bit?
Yeah, the fact that
I forget the title.
That I can't remember it. Let's have a little listen. See Your Sunshine. Because we're coming up to one of my favourites again in a minute. Let's have a little See Your Sunshine, Paul McCartney. Let me just give a little... Oh! No, let's do that again. Let's do that again. Let's ignore that.
Okay, you're right.
Go on, give me the intro.
Okay. Next, we move on to track 3, See Your Sunshine.
I love this.
Do you?
I do love this. It's two songs in one. On the surface, it's a... You know, it is Slushy McCartney.
Yeah.
But actually... I don't mind Slushy McCartney, and this is a really good example of it. It's a really nice sound on it. It's this whole thing. It sounds very 21st century, this whole album. But some of the songs have got a real kind of slightly psychedelic vibe to it. I don't really know what I mean by this. There's like a scratchiness to it, as though it were from 67, 68. And this is one of those. And also... I really like Old Man McCartney voice. Yeah. That phrase is copyright, Take It Away podcast. But I love Old Man McCartney voice when he doesn't try and hide it. And he doesn't try and hide it. For most of this album, he embraces it. And this is charming. This is lovely. I like the vocals. It's got some great harmonies in it.
Oh, and by
the way, the bass playing throughout this entire album.
Astonishing.
Incredible. Some of his best bass playing throughout. And this is the weird thing about McCartney. I was talking to his brother, Mike. Funnily enough, I'm kind of friends with Mike McCartney, which is the weirdest thing.
Superb.
And when we were watching the Mark Lewison show, me and my friend, and I was texting Mike in the middle going, what do you reckon, some of your pictures here, picture of your Big Jim, your dad, and he was replying. But I was talking to Mike McCartney about this when he came on my radio show, about how Paul, I don't know what the situation is now, but certainly, you know, the 80s, 90s and early 21st century, had no confidence as a bass player, didn't rate himself as a bass player. And, you know, and you'd often hear interviews with people like Elvis Costello or musicians who worked with him, and they'd say, he doesn't think he can play bass guitar, you know, and yet the world looks at him as, well, I've got three favourite bass guitar players, the Paul McCartney, Colin Moulding, from XTC.
Yeah.
And it was Carole Kaye from the Wrecking Crew, but she's a horrible human being.
Really?
Oh, yeah, she sent me an email, and she used the C word in that email.
Wow.
All I did was ask her for an interview, and I made the mistake of, I really enjoyed your work with the Wrecking Crew. I'm a bass player, I'd love for you, although I'm not as good as you, self-deprecating, I'd love to invite you on my show for an interview. How dare you effing use that phrase, the Wrecking Crew? There's no such effing band.
Wow.
That name was invented by that misogynistic C, Hal Blaine. Wow. She may have used an anti-Semitic phrase as well. I'm not totally sure.
No.
Can't quite remember. But it was a really abusive email. And I wrote back saying, I'm really sorry. I didn't know that was it. Of course I should have known that. I'm really, really sorry. I'd love you to come on. And I will not come on any... I only would do interviews for the BBC. I was actually working at the BBC at the time. Oh, you were. I had BBC in my email. I will not do any interview with any... Just abusive. And wow. I was so upset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was so upset. And so
it's not the sort of person you'd expect that to come from.
So I wrote back saying, dear Ms. K,
yeah.
If you will look at my email address and my first email, you will see I do work for the BBC. Secondly, I'm a huge fan and I found the way you spoke to me completely disrespectful. A simple no would have sufficed. Instead, you chose to use foul language, which I have found personally very upsetting. I would like it if you didn't contact me again. Something like that. Mm. I was heartbroken.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, most of the times you get ignored or you get, I'm not doing any interviews at the moment. That's fine.
Yeah.
But to send back.
That's amazing.
But then if you kind of look at her online, she has a reputation for this. Also a really weird reputation for saying she was playing on songs that can be historically proven she was not playing on. A lot of the Motown stuff, she claims she played on a lot of Beach Boys stuff. I know she did play on some Beach Boys stuff, but a lot of Beach Boys stuff that she wasn't on, she takes credit for. So really interesting individual. I'd still like to talk to her now.
Yeah.
And go at the end of it and go, by the way, I emailed you 10 years ago. What was going on then for you? I'd love to, but...
I would have replied, right, next time I listen to Pet Sounds, I'm going to turn the bass right down.
It was really disappointing, but she is brilliant. But McCartney is one of the greatest. And he has no confidence. And I was talking to Mike McCartney about this. And I said, why does he...
Yeah.
And he didn't have an explanation. He kind of backed it up and said, yeah, strangely, he doesn't think he's that good. But he's obviously one of the greatest in the world. And on this album, you really hear it. Really clever, sometimes kind of like jazz playing against these rock songs. It's sliding all over the place. That wonderful melodic sense that he kind of brought to the instrument, you know, when the Beatles stopped touring. Actually, before the Beatles stopped touring. You listen to like All My Loving or something. Mm. Or 8 days a week. So great, great bass playing from him on this.
Yeah. The thing I picked up on this with the lyrics... if these are about Heather, these are some of the most gracious lyrics.
This is about their divorce, isn't it, this song, I think? Gratitude's about the divorce, yes.
But I get the feeling, this is, bear in mind what was going on in the press, but he's saying, or singing, she makes me feel glad, I want her so bad, my heart is beating madly for her.
That's a nice little
If you ask me why, I'm not going to lie, I have to say I adore her.
That's all right, isn't it? Imagine McCartney writing that about you.
Yeah.
That's all right.
It's weird when you remember what was being said about her and he's coming out with those lyrics and it's, what a guy. Yeah.
Now, I have a controversial theory on the next song, Only Mama Knows.
Yes.
No one... This is a great song. This is great. It's got an amazing introduction.
Yeah.
Which is completely nothing to do with the song, but I think it ends the song as well.
Yeah.
And that is the song, I think when my friend said, oh, it sounds like Wings, I think that's the song he was referring to, because that has got a real sort of 75, 76 Wings sound, sort of, you know, when they would do Dirty Rockers. It's got that. Here's my controversial theory. It's about Linda dying.
Really?
This is my theory. No, I've never heard this theory anywhere else. Everyone I've mentioned it to has laughed at me, so thank you for not laughing, which makes me think it probably has zero credibility. But Only Mama Knows Why She Laid Me Down in This Godforsaken Town. It's all about being abandoned, right? It's all about being abandoned. There's a line about, will I ever get to see my dad again? Yeah. It's about life. It's about death. Mama is Linda McCartney. She's left him completely on his own. This Godforsaken Town is either an actual city or it's a metaphor for life, you know, because of course she was his life. He was completely lost, and he's questioning, why the hell did you do? Why have you left me?
Yeah.
Linda, why have you left me like this? That's my theory.
I'd go along with that. Because the only other thing I thought it might be his mum, as in sort of let it be, he had a dream about his mum.
Yeah.
Kind of that kind of thing. But that equally, she would be called Mama, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
She's the mama of his kids.
By the way, not name dropping too much, but actually having Mike McCartney sat as close to me as you are.
Wow.
And being able to talk to him about his mum and dad.
Yes.
Yeah. Is amazing. And because he was in, he's been in a couple of times, and the first one is the album, I think it's called Woman, and it's a picture of what looks like a nun on the front. It's not, it's his mum. It's his mum as a nurse.
Oh, wow.
And to be able to talk to A. McCartney about their mum, who obviously, you know, died when the boys were sort of early teens, and a woman that has inspired some of the greatest pop songs of all time, and not to downplay in any way the huge impact of a young boy losing their mother. Mm. To sit and be able to talk to him about that was mind-blowing. It was really humbling, actually. I felt really privileged. And he spoke about it very freely and very lovingly. And on Father's Day, I texted it. I tweeted him, because he said something about Father's Day, and I tweeted him sending love to you and Big Jim, his dad. And he replied, thanks so much for that.
Oh.
That's amazing, man, to have that access to something so integral in pop history. I'm not doing that to show off. I'm just saying, you know, it was very humbling to have that conversation. But that's my vaguely controversial, probably slightly wrong theory about Only Mama Knows. But it's a great song, and he's doing the screaming. There's a couple of songs where he does the screaming vocals, and he's getting away with it really well.
Yeah.
On this.
I think this is the last album where we've got Paul really, you know, his voice can really do anything he wants it to, really.
Yeah, definitely. Although his voice is still great for a man in his late 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that he's still... I didn't get to see any of the concerts last year. I couldn't get tickets. But he's still doing all the songs in the original keys.
I know.
I saw Cher last week.
Oh, okay.
Brilliant. Oh, no, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
No, I'm just remembering seeing her in Mamma Mia, or what's the sequel?
Mamma Mia 2. I believe you're referring to.
Let me just Google it. And, it was sort of, how many pairs of tights can you get over one camera lens?
Yeah. Oh, no, she was great, man. She was great. But the opening act was Paul Young.
Wow.
Who was not great. Who was not great. I like Paul Young. I'm not a huge Paul Young fan, but he did some amazing songs, you know, and was a part of me growing up in the 80s. So I thought, Paul Young, great. I don't want to be... It would be very easy to be rude, and I do not want to be rude, but how can I put it? His voice was not there.
Yeah.
And I Googled it, and apparently from about 1989 onwards, he's had terrible voice problems.
Oh, no.
And I remember seeing the Freddie Mercury tribute concert and thinking... My God, what's happened to Paul Young's voice? And this was, it was really poor. Really poor. It was embarrassing, actually. And you go on Twitter and no one had a nice word to say.
Oh,
And you just think,
give him a break.
Come down a key. Just come, because I felt like he was, I'm not a musical expert, it felt like he was doing it in the, just come down a key, because he's got no range at all now. And you think, maybe that would be easier. Mm. I don't know. Anyway, McCartney doesn't do that. And there's some of the higher bits.
Yeah.
It's a little bit throaty, a little bit croaky. But what is he now, 78 or something ridiculous?
And the band can swoop into the rescue.
Yeah.
But I remember when Led Zeppelin reformed.
Right.
Boy, they went down and literally...
Did
like,
they?
Oh, big
yeah,
time.
Yeah,
so, in the days I was born. Like, oh. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Do what you need to. But he still, you know... And I like old man McCartney voice now. I think it's... I like the fact he doesn't try and hide it.
No.
And when he does try and hide it with auto-tune and stuff, he's doing that deliberately. It's not to say, hey, I'm still 60. It's, hey, I'm a 78-year-old man, not really understanding auto-tune, it has to be said. But I'm using this as a tool. It's not to make me sound youthful.
When was that summer when the skies were blue? The bright red cardinal flew down.
Track 5, You Tell Me. And this is painting a picture of summer's gone with Heather. And, yeah, his loneliness is quite tangible in this.
This is nice. I think it's one of the weaker tracks on the album. It's just a nice song. That's all I've got to say about it, really. It's a nice song. It's not rubbish by any stretch of the imagination. You know, even a mediocre McCartney song is better than most. A bad McCartney song is worse than a lot, definitely. But this is just a mediocre, lovely kind of song.
Yeah.
What do you?
I think it's one of the most touching things.
Really? Tell me why. Go on. That's interesting.
I think it's, again, it's his take on the relationship finishing. And it reminds me of the thing your parents say, you know, I'm not angry, I'm just very disappointed.
Oh, the thing I say to my boys. It's a great weapon.
Yeah, it'll stick with
them. Yeah.
And it's the way it just, it's so kind of conversational. Were we there? Was it real? Is it truly how I feel? Maybe, you tell me. And when you read it, but when he's singing it, he's pleading, tell me.
Yeah.
And that's what I take from it anyway. Yeah. And I find it a genuine.
I'm not going to argue with that. I'll buy your view on it, definitely. I think it's all right. Yeah. It's certainly not a stinker. I'd buy your interpretation of that, Chris, yeah.
I like his voice as well. Again, you said the old man McCartney voice. But when he goes into falsetto...
Chris is being molested being mauled by a cat. A 16-week-old cat.
She is the most beautiful kitten I've ever seen in my life.
The thing is, once this finishes recording, I have to take her back to her home, to where she lives. So let's just keep this chat going for as long as we can, because I don't want her to get rid of her.
If we hear the door going, just ignore it. And, I think when he goes into falsetto... It just makes him sound vulnerable, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, there is a vulnerability to this track.
Bellamy's got a lot to do, and I hope that you'll understand. Nobody here has spoiled you, interfere with my plans. Bellamy's got a job to do, and he's hoping you'll understand.
Steady, lads. Easy does it. Here we go.
Grapple me, great nuts. It's Mr. Bellamy. Sorry.
That's a reference for all the 18-year-olds listening.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get.
We've got this beautiful, lovely bush growing. You know, he's a climate denier. Climate change denier.
Is he?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
That's Frankie Howard.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He's a climate change
Surely
denier.
He would No more than most.
No.
Oh,
they're coming for the
no.
cat.
No.
Hang on a second. I'll be back.
There could be with tears.
More on David Bellamy. We might have a little delivery here. What have we got here? Good morning. Oh, lovely. Thank you, man. Thank you very much. Coconuts.
Oh, we're safe. We've still got Willow.
It's a parcel. I've got to let one of my cats out. Cause you want to go out there? Go on. Quick. Go. Thank you, goodbye. Go on out. I've got to lock this so that she can't get out.
Right. Oh, I see you.
Climate change denier, David Bellamy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought that?
Yeah. But this song, what do you think of this song?
I love it.
Okay.
I absolutely
Tell me why.
Love it. It reminds me of old sort of 60s Paul, where he's doing his character songs, so lovely Rita.
Well, Eleanor Rigby being the classic, yeah.
Maxwell, all of those kind of things. And he's just... And he's really, I find he's really enjoying it. It's either about suicide or it's about a man who's just sitting on a ledge enjoying himself.
Or it's about a cat.
It could be about a cat.
Yeah. That's one of the theories I read.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. It's about a cat. For me, it's always been, it fluctuates between a suicide to I just fuck the world. I just want to sit up here, smoke dope and be left alone, please.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Radiohead video. Is it Just, where he's just lying down?
Oh, I don't know that. But you know, he asked Tom York to play piano on it, which is weird.
Yeah.
This is a great...
He didn't want to do it.
This is a great song. And the first time I heard it, when it started, I thought, oh no. Frankie Howard again.
Oh, misses.
But then when he did the voice of the police,
yeah,
I went, oh, this is genius. And I don't know why that swung it for me. I don't know. It swung it. I thought, oh, this is genius. The piano riff is incredible.
I know.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's a really complicated little piece. And this song makes me so happy. Makes me really, really happy. And I, Beatle maniacs out there will be able to tell me, or Macca maniacs, but I can't think of the last time he did a song like that, that is a character song, you know, that isn't I Love You, You Love Me, or you know what I mean? This is a really weird narrative, and it's plonked right in the middle of the album, and it sticks out, I think, like a sore thumb. But a really beautiful sore thumb that you want to kiss and gently bandage and put some Savlon on.
Yeah.
I think this for me is the song the whole album pivots on, Mr. Bellamy. Because it's so... Is that your stomach?
Yeah. Did you hear that?
We did hear that. And if you're listening with... you'll have heard that. I think it's so magnificent. I think it's such a brave thing to do, to go, I'm going to do this. I have no idea where it came from, why he did it. I don't know anything about it.
No.
I just know it's that piano riff alone. Even if that was an instrumental, that would be great. And it's the police officer's voices.
Steady, lads.
Easy does it.
That reminds me of sort of Godley and Cream era 10cc sort of thing they used to do.
Yeah. It's and I also, I can't think of a song. I'm trying to think. He doesn't do it in Maxwell's, does he? Where he does two different voices for two different characters. Is there another? Is there
possibly
another McCartney
Magneto song? Entertainian Man?
Okay, possibly. Okay. I'd have to re-listen to that to get it, but you could be right.
I mean, Magneto was mad.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Maybe. Yes. I felt like I was listening to it then. I think this is just beautiful. My suggestion is, you probably may not know this song, pause this podcast, YouTube Mr. Bellamy, and just you'll have a big grin on your face. You'll have a really big grin on your face. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And he's loving playing the cat, because he's playing all the characters.
He's well into it.
And he's playing the narrator in like this little 4 minute
song. Into it. And it's nuts. It's nuts. It's this insane little story. And he doesn't always get story songs right, but this is like 3.5-4 minutes, and it's a joy. And for me, this is the album. This is the centrepiece of the album. We've kind of had a building up to this, and then we're kind of coming down the other side of the hill. I don't necessarily mean in terms of song quality, but I think there's a real distinct difference between the songs before Mr. Bellamy and after Mr. Bellamy.
I'm so grateful for everything you've ever given me. How can I explain what it means to be loved by you? By you. Loved by you. Loved by you. Show my gratitude. Gratitude. Show my gratitude.
Here's where things start getting a bit deeper with gratitude.
Hated this. Really? Hated this, hated this, hated this. And then I listened to the album again last night. And there's still a part of it that grates with me. There's still a part of it that I just think... Now, this is the song about Heather.
Mm.
And this is written after the split?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. That's really interesting. There's the start of it sits very uncomfortably with me, and I can't really say why. Is it that cheesy thing? Is it gratitude?
Yeah.
But towards the end, when he starts wailing, his voice again. This is, for me, is a really great album for his voice. Hearing his voice in 2007, you know, he wails it towards the end, and it kind of had a bit of an "Oh Darling" vibe to it. This sort of piano "Oh Darling," I think, is a really kind of mournful song, partly because of the tempo, but I just think it's quite mournful. And this had a similar vibe. I wouldn't necessarily say it was as good, but it's a song of two halves. And for me, the second half redeems the first. And actually, when you listen to it again, it works.
He's, I mean, he's, again, the lyrics, I should stop loving you, think what you put me through, but I don't want to lock my heart away. I will look forward to days when I'd be loving you. Until then, going to wish, hope and pray. He genuinely loved her. You know, again, the stories are, oh, poor, he was, you know, deluded or whatever. But he adored her.
Thinking back, we were talking earlier about the press attitude towards her. And do you know what? On the 11 o'clock show, I probably made some jokes about her that were a bit ripe. And I'm not proud of that. But I remember one of the jokes at the time. It was the Q Awards, I think, hosted by Jonathan Ross. And I think McCartney was in the audience. Mm. And Jonathan Ross said, and it was just after the divorce, and Jonathan Ross said, she was accused of being a liar, Heather Mills. A few things, I think they're proven to be untrue. And once you've had a couple of things that you said proven to be untrue, then whatever you say from then on, you can be legitimately argued, well, you're a liar. Why would I believe that? And the gag was something like, from Jonathan Ross in front of Paul McCartney, well, she's such a liar, we'll probably find out she's got two legs. Mm-hmm. So, and you think, oh. And do you know what? Someone can now go on YouTube and find a clip of me doing something similar on the 11 o'clock show. I'm pretty sure of it. And again, I'm not proud of it. I'm ashamed of that. But that's
oh yeah,
that's where we were. That was, and the whole room exploded in laughter. Mm-hmm. That's where we were.
Yeah.
Imagine being that woman.
Yeah.
Imagine. Yeah. That she's lost a leg. You know, she's lost a leg. Whatever you think of her, she's lost a leg. And now we're making jokes about it in front of her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Strange old world. But again, who knows what went on behind closed doors. And, you know, I don't want to kind of stir up any hornet's nests, really. Peace and love to both of them. Mm. You know, I don't know the ins and outs. None of our business. What is our business is how he expresses it in song. Yeah.
Love by you, to be loved by you, love by you. Gratitude.
Do you know, I think that part of it is to do with age and possibly being divorced myself. When I got gifted the album, 2007, so 12 years ago, I wasn't married. I was possibly with my wife, but wasn't married. Mm. When I heard the album, I was married, and liked it, but had a problem with a song like this. And then when I heard the album again in recent years, and again last night and this morning, my thoughts on that song were completely different. And I wonder if that's an age thing. Mm. I wonder if it's a divorce thing. It's a strange relationship. Being divorced, you know, someone you were in love with, you now don't talk to very often. And it's a strange old thing that we should all be so gracious, you know, after a marriage splits up, as he is in that song.
Yes, absolutely. As far as we're aware in the big Beatles story, Paul's only ever had two broken relationships, one with Jane Asher and one with Heather.
Yeah.
And that's it. So he's... A lot of the emotions on here aren't ones that we usually hear because he's not really used to it, I guess.
I was thinking about Jane Asher. Do you know, when Linda died, part of me really hoped he'd get back with Jane Asher. It really did. It really did.
And the Beast was through for him, maybe.
But I was thinking about Jane Asher. Never done one interview about Paul.
Never.
Isn't that amazing? Not amazing for her, because I'm sure she's obviously a thoroughly decent human being. But in the, I was thinking about this the other day as I was cooking. In the 21st century, where we know everything about everybody, and as soon as there's a split, front page, my love hell with such, my love rat, why I left such and such. And I was thinking, she's never said anything about him.
And never will, I don't think.
That's amazing.
I think Mark Lewisohn is trying to get a hold of her.
Right.
And he just said she won't. She's got. Good she's for keeping her. Her dignity to herself.
Good for her.
Yeah,
isn't that incredible? Right. Good for her. I mean, of course, if it were a book, we'd all be devouring it. You know, I've read some salacious books about those guys, but I think that's so amazing that she that's the way she's gone. I think that's incredible, and it's a lesson to all of us, really.
Less is more.
Less is more.
Don't live in the past. Something is changing fast. What we are is what we are, and
Vintage Blues.
Right, then we move on
now,
to...
Now the album little, really starts kicking off. Now it starts... Oh, this is great. Vintage Clothes.
Yes. What do you think of this?
It's incredible. It's incredible. I liked Egypt Station a lot. My beef with Egypt Station was it felt like on some of the songs he was trying to write a pop song. He was trying to write a pop hit. Yeah. It's a great album, but it felt like he was trying to write a song for 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Mm. And I really wanted from that album, I wanted a 76-year-old man telling me what it was like to be 76 and what it was like to be nearer to death, what it was like to look back. I wanted that.
Johnny Cash kind of.
Kind of, yeah. The American recording things. Yeah. And there were a couple of tracks like that. The one about, I got crows at my window and dogs at my door. Oh, man. Mm. What a song. Yeah. So there's some of that. There's some examples on Memory Almost Full where he does... There's one in particular where it's like, I am getting older, I am mortal. Mm. But Vintage Clothes, for me, feels like he's trying to write a pop song for the kids. And it works, man. Mm. It really works. It must be really hard for a 64-year-old, whatever he was, to try and write a current pop song. And for me, Vintage Clothes does it. It's a rocker, it's pop. It's the lyrics, I think, are really, really clever. Mm. All the lyrics on this album, most of the lyrics on this album, I think are some of the best that he's done.
Yes, I agree.
And again, he can get a little bit, oh, I've got a great melody, I'll throw some words on it. I don't mean to demean his art. Again, what songs have I written? But some of the stuff, particularly on Flaming Pie and stuff around that period, it kind of feels like that's what he's done. But this, you can tell he's written the lyrics and he's gone back over them and he's gone back over them. Mm. And Vintage Clothes... It's kind of a joke as well. The stuff that I wore in the 60s, kids are still wearing that. Why? Yeah. What is that about?
Yeah.
I love it.
And again, what you're saying, check the rack, what went out is coming back.
Yeah.
Is he talking about himself? Oh, yeah. About clothes,
there's definitely a comment on him. The thing about McCartney, and he's got it now, is that he has ridden out being really, really cool. It's like a wheel for him. He's really, really cool. Then he's uncool. Then he's forgotten about. Then he's, remember Paul McCartney? Oh, Paul McCartney's brilliant. And it goes round in a wheel. And he must have been through that wheel 4, 5, 6 times in his career at least, of being the hottest thing being a joke, being the hottest thing being a joke. Everyone remembering, oh, God, Paul McCartney's really good. I'd forgotten him being a, you know, and... Mm. I would say for most of the 21st century, he's not, certainly the last 10, 15 years, he's not given a shit about that. No. He doesn't care about that. It feels like he's finally got the journey of the wheel.
Yeah.
Willow.
Hello, baby.
Willow. He's got the journey of the wheel.
Yeah.
And I can't remember why I was telling you that, but that's my important point I want to make.
The Vintage Clothes.
This is just a great, funny song. Now, is this one of the ones he recorded on his own or with the band?
This is with the band.
Right, and I think you can tell, because that band is shit hot.
They are good, aren't they?
This is why he's kept them probably longer, I think, than any other band, because they're flipping amazing band.
Yeah.
And you can, and I like the multi-track McCartney. I love McCartney. I love McCartney 2. When are we going to get McCartney 3? Because I would snap that up. But when he's playing with that band... There's just something quite raw about it. And has he ever done... He's never done Vintage Clothes live, has he?
No, not as far as
I imagine. No. Imagine. And we're now kind of like in a 5-song sort of medley.
Mm.
Okay, that CD player breaks up the tracks, the one I played on last night.
Yeah.
It breaks up the tracks. And they stand alone as individual songs. You know, the medley thing, in the car, okay, it works, you know. But...
Yeah.
I think a little bit too much has been read into that. And a lot of the interviews at the time, or reviews saying, he's done a medley like the end of Abbey Road.
Well that's the first thing you're going to compare it to.
Yeah, but also, he's done that loads of times on solo albums. Yeah, he's done it loads of times. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. This one works quite well. It's not the standard of Abbey Road, but this is a great little mix.
Yeah. I think there was a lovely photo that emerged on... the internet a few weeks ago of Paul, and it's a photo, I think it's one of the sort of August 19, no, probably a bit before, late 1969 Beatles. Mm. And Paul is wearing this sort of white and black top. And somebody pointed out that's the same top that he wore. And they found this photo of John, Paul and George in about 1960.
Oh.
When they were Silver Beatles, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was part of their outfit.
Oh.
So he still had it.
Is that the one with kind of like the sort of...
Yeah.
I saw a picture of that, the Mark Lewison thing, and I was watching that going, yeah. Oh, I'd really like that shirt. That shirt looks wicked.
I reckon Paul's still got it.
Yeah, he probably
I
has.
I reckon he has.
Probably it's like a kind of cowboy type vibe. Yeah, it's a really nice shirt. Yeah. But he was wearing vintage clothes absolutely. Even then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and you forget, like, when they were in their 20s, so apart from enlightening us on... you know, Indian mysticism and changing the revolution and whatever.
Yeah.
They were fashion conscious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they were like Spandau Ballet wear or Duran.
You look at the pictures of George recording Abbey Road, world's first hipster, when he's got, it's not quite a man bun, but he's got a very high ponytail and these big, thick, dark sunglasses in the studio. Jesus, he looks so hot.
He looks
he's
so cool.
He's so sexy and so cool.
That was me at the scout camp in the school play, spade and bucket by the sea. That was me. That was me playing conkers at the bus stop on a blanket in the bluebells. That was me. The same me that stands here now. And when I think that all this stuff can make a life, it's pretty hard to take it in. That was me.
That was me.
Wow.
What a song,
wow.
Man. You talk about nods back to the Beatles. This is just hilarious.
This is
full of jokes, full of wonderful, you know, imagery and bits that I get and bits that I don't get. Lines sweating cobwebs. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's him basically going, I was in the fucking Beatles. You weren't. Only four of us were. Two of us are dead now. So please don't tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what happened.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
I did it. I played bass in the Beatles in the cavern, right?
Yeah.
It was me. You might know the dates. You might know exactly what day and what guitar and all of that stuff. But only me and Ringo now know what that felt like.
Yeah.
So up yours. It amazes me that I did it, but it was me. Get lost. And that's it. And it's wonderful because of it. It's wonderful. You were in the Beatles, Paul. You know, you were in the bloody Beatles, mate. Own it. And he does now. He does now, which is great. I think for a while he was a bit coy about it. But
I think Ringo once said that, didn't he? He said, you know, people talk about the Beatles, whatever, but it's when me and Paul are together and we just look each other in the eye. And we know we were there.
Yeah, because they saw it. We've all seen the footage. Some of us have been lucky to meet some of them, but we've all looked at them. Those four were looking out at us. They were in the eye of the storm, and they're the only ones. You know, even Mal Evans and you know, Neil Aspinall and all those people, they had a better idea than only those four people know what it was like looking out. From that, and this song is that, and it just makes me laugh, and it's got a really fun sound to it, almost a kind of rockabilly. It's almost like a 20 Flight Rock kind of vibe to it. This sounds, I'm sure it's not, but it sounds like it's thrown together. It sounds like a rehearsal, and it's just joyous.
Yeah, and it is. It's like it's got a kind of comedy swagger.
Yeah,
isn't it? It's like, it's me.
Yep, good. Aren't it?
Yeah.
Own it.
You're a police boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like there's that great line, isn't there, where, you know, he goes, you know, about the White Album, you know, some people don't like it. Some people say it should have been a single album. But, you know, I think it's great. It's the Bloody White Album by the Bloody Beatles. Yeah. You know, it's great. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's the Bloody White Album, although, of course, we all know it's called The Beatles. There's no such album. Yeah. It's the White Album. It's the Bloody White Album by the Bloody Beatles.
Yeah.
And it's great. Good for you.
Yeah.
Love is fine. It's like the stab in the heart, a hidden treasure made to measure for my pleasure. I had it my way. I've got my feet in the clouds, got my head on the ground. I know that I'm not square as long as they're not around, but I find it very, 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 very hard.
Next we have Feet in the Clouds.
I quite like this one. I think it's a really nice song. It's got a really nice sound to it. Again, a kind of scratchy late 60s sound. And on repeated listening, I even like the very, 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 very much. Which I think he stole from The Scaffold.
Yes.
From The Scaffold. Yeah. So I'm hoping Mike gets a few quid out of it. But there is part of me that thinks repeating the same word over and over again. Okay. It's like, what's the John Lennon song? John Sinclair. It ain't fair, John Sinclair. Gotta. You kind of think, okay.
That's painful, though.
Yeah, it is. But this is really nice, and I'm just thinking there's a really nice chord change in this song, isn't there?
Yeah.
After the very, very, verys.
Yes. It goes very, very much.
That's it. And it's dun, dun. No, I take back what I said. This is a great song. Mm. This is actually a great song. And I don't think I've got any. There's me saying there's a couple of weak songs in it. Actually, the weak songs are still really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying talking to you about this because I think this is really important.
Yes.
Important. But this is one of those albums. It came out on Starbucks label.
I know.
You know, you'd see it in
and
Starbucks.
And given away free in the Daily Mail.
I think it was actually. You're right, yeah. And that was part of the another thing that made people go, ooh, Paul, what are you doing? So you'd go and buy a coffee and there'd be a Paul McCartney and there was someone else at the same time. It wasn't James Taylor, it was someone like that. You think, oh dear, Paul. This is on the Starbucks label, and it's and a lot of people don't know about this, and they need to know about it. You can probably get it for. I'm going to tell you how much you can get it for on Amazon because you need to have this. This is a really lovely song, actually, and Memory Almost Full. Hang on, Memory Almost Full CD, Paul McCartney. That's £5.60, guys.
Wow,
£5.60. Go and buy it.
Go and buy
£5.60. Treat yourself. You will not regret it. This is beautiful. It sounds a bit mellotronic. Is there a mellotron on there?
It's got harpsichords.
Right.
Near the end, the bit where he's doing the robotic, I love you very, very much, there's a harpsichord that I swear sounds like it's from Because.
Yeah.
You've got a few seconds in there. You could be listening to Abbey Road.
Yeah.
You've got the harmonies and the harpsichord playing. Yeah. Oh, it's astonishing. Also, the very, very... It's easy to sort of pull that apart. I'm wondering, when Press came out, the song, he got a lot of criticism for the I love you very, very much. And a lot of people took the... And same thing with Silly Love songs. They were saying, oh, he's writing these silly... I'm wondering if the fact that basically most of this song is him going, very, 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 but so beautifully.
Yeah.
One of his him sort of throwing it back in the
it
face.
It is really nice.
I hope so.
And again, it sounds like a song written by a man in his mid-60s. Mm. You know, it's beautiful.
Lightning hits the house of wax. Poets spill out on the street to set alight the incomplete remainders of the future.
House of Wax.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is the psychedelic masterpiece, right, that we were playing when you came in. This is
serious high drama.
This is as good as any Beatles song. This is, honestly, this would fit on a Beatles album. And because it's track 11 on an album that people don't really know, hardly anyone knows it.
Yeah.
It's insanely good. It's triumphant. It's got a swagger, an arrogant swagger to it. His voice... just keeps going up and up, and you're thinking, my God, man, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, and just these chords, there's magnificent kind of chords climbing up, and the swelling of the instruments in the background, and it just gets bigger and bigger and built up to this pinnacle.
Very deep below.
think it's wonderful. Wonderful. I played it yesterday and I'd forgotten about it. And I did. I played it three or four times in a row. Just went back. Once the album finished, I just went back to that song because it's beautiful. It's like a really clear 1968 song. It would have sounded really nice on Magical Mystery Tour, an album that is you know, the EPs or the album, which is patchy. But just something about that, or maybe even Abbey Road, just something about that song. Mm. I think it's beautiful. Yeah. It's in my top 10 McCartney songs, including Beatles songs.
Wow.
Definitely.
It's the most of the songs in this sort of minor key. When it changes to that major, as you say, it's one of the most uplifting moments.
You just go up. You just get lifted up to heaven. Yeah. Yeah. So powerful. Mm. No one knows it.
Oh, I know.
No one. I'm patronising you, dear listener. I'm sure you're listening and go, well, I know it. And that is brilliant. But we have to spread the word about this.
Yes.
And this is the thing about all McCartney albums. This album is great and it's packed full of stuff. There's always one, at least, incredible song in there. Even on Wildlife, we wouldn't be able to name it at the moment, but there's always one incredible, maybe not Wildlife, there's always one incredible song hidden on there. And then this is full of great songs, but this is one of his best.
Mm. It's rare that he has that amount of high drama in his songs.
Yeah.
Like maybe Backseat of My Car.
Yeah, yeah.
And Through Our Love on Pipes of Peace.
Okay, yeah.
Similar kind of. But that's not really the. I don't know if he feels comfortable with it. But here it sounds. He's not using the falsetto when he's going up. He's singing that note.
Yeah.
As a 64, 5 year old.
And he's doing it.
And hitting it. And it's. Oh, it's heart wrenching.
I got goosebumps when I heard it last night. And I hadn't listened to Sam for a couple of years. And I got goosebumps. And I got goosebumps again this morning when I played it. It's just. It's spiritual. It's magnificent. Magnificent.
At the end of the end, it's the start of a journey to a much better place. And this wasn't bad, so a much better place would have to be special. No need to be sad. On the day that I die, I'd like jokes to be told and stories of old to be rolled out like carpets the children have played on and laid on while listening to stories of old. At the end of the end, it's the start of a journey to a much better place. And a much better place would have to be special. No reason to cry.
Next, we have a song that made me cry on the way
here. Yeah, I can get that.
The End of the End.
This is what I wanted Egypt Station to be.
Okay.
I wanted it to be this. You know, isn't it funny thing? Gosh, when it came out, Paul McCartney's 64. It's maybe the last album we ever. I mean, like rubbish. He's 78. He's still putting them out. Who knows? You know, we might not get one for 5 years. We might get three next week. You just don't know with him.
Yeah.
This is an older man, kind of looking. We've had the looking back, and now he's kind of looking forward to what is going to happen when he dies. It's a song about dying and about what happens to him, but more importantly, what happens to those around him when he dies. You know, are they going to be singing? Are they going to be dancing? Are they going to be laughing? Are they going to, you know, have a good time remembering him? Has he brought enough joy to the world? Is his legacy important? And by legacy with a small L, in terms of his family and his friends. That's what it's about. It's not, will the world remember me as a Beatle? It's like, will my kids and will my loved ones, what will they think of me when I'm gone? Will they be proud of me? Will they think I've done enough? Oh, it is beautiful. I'm welling up thinking about it, actually. It is beautiful.
He knew. We all know the Paul story. We know who's died in his life that's meant so much. And obviously Linda and John, and just he's experienced so much. And still his default reaction is to be positive. I kind of think of this, of him singing this to his kids, because it's their mum, you know, and it's at the end of the end, at the start of a journey to a much better place, and a much better place would have to be special.
This is it.
No Reason to Cry.
Yeah.
That's a bit that gets
a me. Much better place would have to be special, because he's saying, it's been all right here.
Yeah.
I've had a great time here. This place is all right. The next place is even better. Wow. That'll do me. Goosebumps again.
Yeah.
We've all had someone die in our lives. You know, we've all lost someone. I got very emotional because I got some pictures framed of my dad the other day, 2 days ago. And I put them out and I was a little bit weepy. So hearing that song the day after I'd been having a little cry over my dad who passed a few years ago. Whoa. You know, and I don't live with my kids anymore, so it's about missing people as well. You know, I live in this house on my own, and when my boys aren't here, it's a very empty house, and a song like that echoes through the hallways. Not hallways, I live in a mansion, but, you know, it's a really powerful song, and again, his voice is perfect for that. It's old, and it's tired.
Yeah.
And
he's been through all of that himself.
You get the vibe. I don't know if he did, but it sounds like they recorded that 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning after a session. Should we try that song one more time? Let's do it. I think we're done, lads. We're not enough. Here's my problem with the album. That's the perfect end to the album.
Yeah.
That's the perfect ending to the album.
But Paul does have a tradition for throwing in little... Well, I don't know. What do you think? End with Nod Your Head.
It's a great B-side.
Yes.
It's a brilliant B-side. I think it was a single, actually, wasn't it? Is that the video where it's loads of dancers behind him?
No, that's... Ever Present Past.
That was it. The video for that is incredible.
Yeah.
Do you know how they did that?
Yeah.
Go on, because you probably know it better than
me. If you see it, it looks like Paul and a group of dancers have learnt the most intensely bizarre dance routine. But it's not. It's Paul just making it up, and then the dancers had to learn...
Had to learn it.
What he'd made up.
And it looks...
It looks great.
So cool.
Yeah.
And this was the period when he was wearing... suits with white shirts, but having the buttons of the cuffs undone, which is a thing I still do because of that era. Yeah. So, and he looks so fucking cool there, and he's doing that dance. And you're right, there's 20, 30 dancers behind him doing it, and it looks like. And you do think, how the hell did Paul McCartney learn that? And then you realise he did it first, and they copied him, which in some ways makes it even cleverer.
Yeah,
I think it shows the skill of the choreographer and the dancers to match that. It's great. Nod Your Head.
It's got charm, hasn't it?
When it popped up yesterday, charm. I quite enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed it, possibly for the first time. A B-side. It's a really, really good B-side. It's a weak A-side. It could have... you could have... See, my track... I would put Dance Tonight and Nod Your Head... probably after You Tell Me, in between You Tell Me and Mr. Bellamy, I'd put those two in there.
Yeah.
Then you've got Mr. Bellamy, then you've got Coming Down the Other Side.
Yes.
I think that's how I'd do it. But I it's only 1 minute 58. I enjoyed it last night for the first time.
Yeah. And it's all after the, you know, the pain and, you know, heart-wrenching end of the end. I think it's not... I think what he was trying to do, what he did at the end of Flaming Pie, where you got Beautiful Night, and then he just throws in Great Day after that. It's a little play on words. But it just gives it that final, like Her Majesty at the end. But it's not quite jaunty enough
to do what he wants to do. And is there any better ending? I know there's the Run Out Groove, but is there any better ending to an album than A Day in the Life? You know, that kind of melancholic... Shit, what are we all here for? We're going to die. Life is actually quite hard work. That's my interpretation of A Day in the Life anyway. That mellow, kind of a bummer vibe is a great way, a bold way to end an album. And I think that this album would have... It just feels like such a beautiful ending to an album. You know, when you put an album on, it's a little bit longer than you think, and it's dark outside, and you think, well, when this finishes, I'll go up to bed. You end with that. And you'll be sat there for 10 minutes going, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. But then it's, nod your head.
round and round.
It's a nice guitar sound on Nod Your Head. I like that kind of scratchy guitar sound. But nah, mate.
Ian, it's been an absolute joy.
We're not done,
going
are we?
Back, no, just going back to the... Right, overall...
Yes, sir.
How would you persuade someone who'd never heard this before? Most of the people I'm guessing listen to this will have.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, non-Paul McCartney fans would... A lot, you know, people need to hear this album.
I think it's very, very important. I think it's a fiver on Amazon. It'll be on YouTube for free or Spotify. It's on all those places. You've got nothing to lose. It may help you reevaluate Paul McCartney. And I think here's the thing. When Paul McCartney dies, albums like this will be dug out and people go, "Oh my God. Have you heard Memory Almost Full from 2007? It was kind of ignored at the time. Actually, it was quite a big hit. Fairly biggish hit. But it's amazing. He's got all these great track... Nod your head. No, I'm joking. But, you know, he's got all these great vintage clothes. That was me. Albums like this will be rediscovered and refound. And I can't convince you to listen to it. If you don't listen to it, you're a loser. You're a square, daddy-o. But the thing about McCartney is he doesn't really seem to care. Comes out, it's a hit, great. Comes out, it's not a hit, great. Carry on.
Yeah.
He's that circle of being cool. You know, Egypt Station came at a time when we were at peak McCartney coolness again.
Yeah.
And I think Britain has finally fallen into step with that. America took Wings a lot more seriously. My American friends on Facebook and things don't quite get the joke about Wings. You know,
really?
And Wings, but you know, partly because of Alan Partridge. You know, Wings, the band the Beatles could have been. The Crossroads theme. We've got all of these little things in Britain that remind us that Wings were a joke. And I don't know if you are aware of the comedian Greg Turkington, who's does On Cinema with Tim Heidecker, and he came over a while ago, and I was lucky enough to go record shopping with him. And we were talking about Wings, and he found this album, and I said, "You know that Wings are a joke over here." He's like, "What?" I said, they're kind of seen as a bit of a joke, and he couldn't understand why that would be. And older me struggles to understand why that would be, having listened. And it means I've missed out on a lot of good music. I only listened to Red Rose Speedway for the first time this year.
Mm.
What an album. London Town.
Yeah.
What's the song? Backwards Traveller.
Backwards Traveller.
What? He's written a song about a time traveller and no one told me? There is some great stuff out there. Oddly enough, the one I don't rate that much is Band on the Run. There's just something a little bit...
Is it over familiar, perhaps?
I don't think it's that. I don't rate it. I love the song Band on the Run. I love Hell and Wheels, American release only. But Red Rose Speedway. Anyway, what I'm saying is, when Paul dies, we'll do that thing we always do with people when they're dead. We go, "Oh, weren't they brilliant?" And we always loved them, and we never said anything bad about them at all. When we should be saying that to them while they're still alive.
Yes.
Say it to them while they're still alive. Go and shake their hand. Go and buy their album. Go and post nice things on Twitter about them, even if they're never going to see it. Stop posting "people are twats." Go and post, "I really love this artist and I really love this song," and post a link to it. Do that. Let's celebrate their life while they're still alive. That's what we should do. And I think this album is a great celebration of life.
Perfect. Ian Lee, thank you so much. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you, Chris.
At the end of the end, it's the start of a journey to a much better place. And a much better place would have to be special. No reason to cry. No need to be sad. The end of the end.